If I bleed tonight, if I am sad tonight, I don't have a job to find. And if I work tonight, if I'm so tired tonight, I'll fall asleep when I'm home, when I'm home. Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Power Slam podcast here on Inside the Ropes. My name is Kenny McIntosh, joined as always when we pay homage to the magazine of the 90s and the noughties by its king, its royalty, Finn Martin. Hi Finn, how are you?
Yeah, not bad. Not bad. Actually, I've had a bit of a cold this week, Kenny, and it's affected my voice slightly. About a week after you and Sondra.
Oh, a week after you were going, I don't know what you young'uns are like. I'm invincible.
I think I caught it from you two over the Skype line. That's what it was.
I mean, you're showing your age now with that kind of comment. That's like when you give your gran a phone and they go, "Can they see me?" You go, "No, it's a phone call." Anyway, we have tons to talk about this week, Finn. Where should we start? I mean, let's start with this one. WWE are going to be selling Titan Towers. They're going to be moving in 2021 to another location in Stamford, Connecticut for a 16.5-year lease with options to extend. Are you surprised that they are moving from Titan Towers? And if you had enough money, would you buy it?
Well, I mean, I think they're wanting to bring everything together, aren't they, under one roof. That's the plan, isn't it?
Yeah, because the production studio is in a separate location.
Yes, so I absolutely understand why they're going to do this. I'm sure this has been in the works for quite a while. So as they expand, take on more staff and do more things, it's obviously logistically is going to be far more convenient for everyone if they're all under one roof. So I'm not surprised that this has happened. As for whether or not I would buy, is it 1241 East Main Street, I believe, is WWE's current location. Yep. No, I wouldn't buy it, Kenny. I wouldn't buy it because from what people tell me, Stamford, Connecticut is not a very nice place to live. And yeah, I'm very happy here living in Lancaster. Thank you very much.
You do love Cumbria. You really do.
Lancaster is in Lancashire, Kenny, and Kendal is in Cumbria. We're just on the border there, but I live in Lancaster, but from Cumbria.
Okay, well, cool. So, I mean, the thing is, if you bought it, you could reenact the Super Bowl advert. They filmed that in the Titan Towers.
Well, I think it probably just would be a lot cheaper, easier, and far less effort to just watch the one that they did back in 1999 on YouTube, wouldn't it?
Or, I mean, you could, in Cumbria or Lancashire, wherever you want to buy it, you could buy, like, a big building, call it Martin Manor.
Well, to be honest with you, Kenny, that's what my current abode is called. I mean, I didn't want to, like, come across as a braggart by mentioning that on the podcast, but that's what my residence is called. So I've already achieved that, thanks.
I mean, because we don't mention on the podcast that whenever I call you, it's actually your butler from the East Wing that answers, and then you get on a little train to where the phones are to come and speak to me. It's a hardship for you to even get to the phone.
Exactly. I mean, we didn't want to mention this because it could lead to resentment. We don't want any of that.
We would never want people to think that you're above things, or for you to think that. Anyway. So there's a ton of stuff.
Wait, if you had the money, Kenny, would you buy it?
If I was like a billionaire, like if I had stupid money, I would definitely buy it. I'd be like, okay, I'm only going to buy it if you keep all of the posters on the walls. Copy me a bit of every tape that's there. I'd make a generous offer and say I just want to walk in it once in a while and just have it be like a big man cave.
Yeah, it'd be a pretty big man cave. I remember one time years ago, a couple of Power Slam readers went there and actually took a picture of themselves holding up copies of Power Slam in front of it. It's really funny. Really funny.
I always, because it's funny, not too long ago, I actually had to call Titan Towers for a reason I won't go into, but when I was calling it, I was expecting it to be from, as it was in Beyond the Mat, World Wrestling Federation, please hold. But it's not, funnily enough. They've moved on in 20 years. But the funny thing was, when you call, they have this kind of automated person who says, you know, if you know your partner's extension, say it now. And I did. But before I did that, I was like, I'm just going to listen to the rest of the options. And there's one where it says, if you have fan opinions, say fan opinions. I'm like, oh my God, I want to hear the voicemails on that one. Can you imagine phoning them to just give fan opinion? Like, yeah. How many people called just to say, gender shite, take the belt off them?
Yeah, they probably don't even have a recording device at the end of it.
It just goes into the ether.
That's right.
But yeah, it's weird. Titan Towers is always associated with WWE. I know that, I mean, I guess it's different, but if you had been in the States, you would have probably ended up, if you'd been running PowerSlam in the States, you would have probably got an invite to Titan Towers at some point. Because in the early to mid-90s, that's what Vince would do, right? He would invite the media around, try and schmooze them. And, you know, you'd have been up for a wee schmooze, right? You went along, sampled the finger buffet and just seen what he had to say.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would have been very interesting having the tour. I know lots of other people have had the tour. And the place, as you say, Kenny, they've got so much history there that it's hard to imagine that they're ever going to leave and that they won't be at that address and they won't be in that building. Which we've seen in, you know, so many TV programs. It's been used in so many angles. You know, Savvy was also featured in all the features that news companies did on the company back in 1991 and 1992 during the scandal era. So it's a place that will forever be synonymous with World Wrestling Federation or the World Wrestling Entertainment. So it sort of does feel a bit sad that they are going to be leaving. Even though it's not going to be for a while, there's still something a bit sad about it, I think.
Yeah, it's going to be a weird day. I know someone who worked there, and one of the things he'd done was actually send me a photo of him outside Titan Towers. It's something that the kind of kid in me would like to go and take a photo there of myself outside of it, but I don't know if I'd go all the way to Stamford, Connecticut just to do it.
Well, you've got a photo of yourself, Kenny, outside the Father Ted house. The only thing that could top that is a picture of you outside Titan Towers.
Well, see, now you've convinced me. Now maybe I need to make the trip. Well, we'll see. I don't know how long it is from New York to Stamford, Connecticut, but we'll see. So there's plenty of other stuff going on in wrestling right now. One of the things that was pretty interesting is Cody Rhodes, or Cody, has tried to trademark some kind of interesting terms. He's tried to trademark Bash at the Beach and Battle Bowl and stuff like that. What do you make of him trying to trademark that? And do you think that if AEW did an event like Bash at the Beach, he ended up putting a tease up of, he put a tweet up with a kind of gif of a beach with just the text Bash? Do you think that bringing something like that brand is something strong enough that they should do again?
No, I don't think they should bring that back. I mean, presumably WWE owns that since they acquired all of WCW's trademarks and intellectual property in the 2001 sale. So
some of them have run out.
Oh, some of them have run out. Okay. All right. Still, I would think that that's something that's going to irritate WWE. And like also because WWE has those events, obviously on its WWE network, when it finds out, I'm sure obviously it's well aware that this is going on, maybe it could fight them for it. I mean, maybe WWE doesn't want them. But I mean, to me, they are old events that really kind of tinge with failure because WCW in the end up did fail. And why would you really want to bring that up? I can understand why, if it were available, which I'm sure it isn't because WWE is using it now at the takeover events, I can understand why Cody would want, say, to use War Games because that was one of his father's most famous creations in Jim Crockett Promotions back in 87. So I could understand why there would be some, you know, an emotional attachment to that name, but I don't really get why Bash at the Beach would be something that he would be eager to obtain. And same really goes for Battle Bowl. I mean, I remember Battle Bowl in WCW, and it was never something that really got over. And it was something that they dropped after a few years, and no one really missed it. So I don't see why he's seeking to obtain these for All Elite Wrestling. I think they would be better off just coming up with brand new names. That's what I think. What do you think, Kenny?
I mean, I think part of it's going to be that he wants to retain some of his dad's stuff, you know, and he can't really do that while WWE have all the, you know, they have Starcade and they have War Games and all that kind of stuff. So I guess he's kind of taking what's left. I think Bash at the Beach is actually something that would be a good idea, like something that I miss that wrestling doesn't really do anymore. WWE specifically have never really done it. You know, WCW used to do like Road Wild and Bash at the Beach and the Spring Break Nitros, and I thought they were like great. Like, I mean, not as much Road Wild, but like Bash at the Beach and Spring Break Nitro, they aesthetically looked great. They looked so different, they looked so vibrant. And I think something like a Bash at the Beach, I would be interested in that. I think that would be pretty good. Obviously, I don't think he should be aiming to get the whole calendar of events, but I mean, I get, because did Dusty come up with Bash at the Beach?
Well, Bash at the Beach started in 1994. And at that point, Ric Flair was the WCW booker. And then when Hogan came in, effectively, he became the head booker. But it was Hogan, Flair and Bischoff who were the three power players in WCW at the time. Or maybe you could just say Hogan was the power player and his lieutenants were Bischoff and Flair in that order. But I don't think Dusty came up with that. But I could be wrong.
Maybe that's something he came up with that we just don't know about. Because it would seem a strange thing for Cody to go after if it didn't have some attachment to Dusty.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible that he did come up with it. I'm sure Great American Bash was Dusty's brainchild. Because that had been around, that was invented during the Crockett promotion years, and they'd do the tour and do the big shows and everything, and that was a big success for a few years, and obviously was successful as a pay-per-view for WCW for many years. But as for Bash at the Beach, no, it started in 94. The first one would have been Hogan versus Flair. I'm sure that's right.
Yeah.
And Dusty definitely wasn't. I'm sure Dusty wasn't booking then. Absolutely convinced he wasn't, because it was Ric Flair.
Well, I think because the wasn't the year before, like in 92, 93, it was Beach Blast rather than Bash at the Beach.
Beach Blast, that's right. Well, Dusty had the book then because it was Dusty and Bill Watts who were in charge summer of 92. And then I think 93 would have been Ole Anderson, I think, was the booker then. But by then, of course, obviously Beach Blast had been invented. So yeah, there's got to be some sort of connection there. There's got to be a reason why he's attempting to trademark this name. But, you know, I mean, it's either way, it doesn't really matter. I mean, what's in a name? I mean, obviously WWE's big events like WrestleMania, Royal Rumble and SummerSlam, they mean a lot, but quite a few of the events, when you think about it, most of the B-level pay-per-view shows that WWE runs, doesn't really matter what they're called when you think about it. It's only the real big ones that I think people care about. That's the only ones they really care about in terms of what the name of the show is anyway.
I think if I had to pick two that AEW or WWE actually did would be Bash at the Beach, and one that I have a soft spot for, I don't know why, is Halloween Havoc. I just, and you went to Halloween Havoc live in Vegas. We talked about this before.
Yes.
So you've been in the building with the big orange pumpkin.
That's right. Yeah, I was there. Yeah, the MGM Grand Garden Arena it was in 99, October 99. Yeah. I always liked the Halloween Havoc name as well. I thought it was, and I always liked, and this was something that never got over. And it was never, and it, to me, this was something that should have got over, and it never did, was the whole spin the wheel, make the deal gimmick. I thought that was a brilliant invention, and it just never got over and was dropped. And I just thought, what a shame. You know, with the wheel of misfortune, where you'd spin it around, and which gimmick match would the main eventers compete? What would be the rules they would compete under in the main event? We would find out earlier on the show and then spin the wheel and then I'd have that match later on the show. I mean, they kind of blew it with the coal miners glove match between Jake and Sting. I mean, it was, I guess, pretty much over at that point. So that match was so bad. But it just seemed like such a great concept. And I think it's a shame that it's never been brought back. And I think WWE, if they were to use it, I think it's something that would really attract a lot of interest.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, Cody, apparently he's the ones that we know, the ones that have been reported by PW Insider that he has filed for trademarks for are Prince of Wrestling, Battle Bowl, Bash at the Beach, and Bunkhouse Stampede. And Cody later wrote a tweet which said, "I'd turn off the Google alerts on trademarks. They're personal, and most aren't intended for AEW. I've filed and claimed over 50 the last few months. I'm just trying to get some of Dad's cattle back. That's the story." So it'll be something to keep an eye on, I guess. Which is funny because, like, a couple of weeks ago, I was catching up in NXT, and you watch the beginning of it, and it's the Dusty Rhodes Tag Classic beginning. They're calling him the Godfather of NXT, and his theme song's playing everywhere. And it just seems so weird that, like, he's kind of like the Godfather of NXT, but his son, who's trying to keep his name alive, is now competition. It's a weird place to be in.
Yeah, well, it is. Yeah, I'm with you there, and it is definitely an odd thing. But WWE has obviously got the right to use the Dusty Classic, and it's something they feel has got some value and has got some merit, and it gets over, doesn't it, with the audience? And you can understand, you know, Cody's stance as well, because obviously he's Dusty's son. So I mean, you can understand both sides, and as long as no malice is intended, it's fair enough. It's all good, as far as I'm concerned.
Before we talk about Raw and SmackDown, which are obviously and leading into WrestleMania, which is all the big stuff, I did want to ask you about, and it's completely gone out of my head now. I've had a brain fart, Finn. Oh no, I was going to say, but last night on NXT UK, they announced that
it's your age, Kenny. Don't worry about it. This will become more. These type of moments will become more regular.
Well, I mean, I am approaching my mid-20s, so, you know, I need to take care of myself.
Yeah.
so Pete Dunne has announced that he is going to be defending his NXT, his WWE UK Championship at the TakeOver New York event against Walter. Where do you think that match is going to stack up on the weekend? Could it steal the weekend in terms of WWE matches?
Well, I mean, it could do. You would think it's time for Pete to drop the title. I mean, what's he on now? Are we into... Have we passed 700 days yet?
I'm going to Google it right now. He won the title, Pete Dunne, title day count. I don't know if that's even the right term. He's
got to be close.
It's over 668 days.
Oh, right, okay. So we're not on 700 days yet. Surely it's got to be Pete's time to drop the belt. I mean, Walter's obviously going to be a huge star, at least on the NXT brands. I don't know how he's going to do on the main roster, but he's going to do well in the NXT brands. He's obviously well qualified, well worthy of holding that championship and being the man who dethrones Pete Dunne. I mean, that was set up, wasn't it, in the when he made his debut in Blackpool?
Yeah, it was.
At the end, yeah. So, I mean, this is all logical booking. This all makes sense. This is a match that people, I'm sure, want to see. I mean, it could steal the show. I would think it will be a really good match. And obviously a great moment for Pete Dunne as well. One imagines that he will be summoned to the main roster in the Superstars, at the International Superstar Shake-Up in mid-April. That's taking place the week after WrestleMania, isn't it?
Montreal,
that's right. So it does feel like Pete's time to be called up. I thought he did well at Royal Rumble. I thought he got over. I thought that the performers he was in there with were very generous with their selling for him. And also, obviously, it was laid out in that way. I get that. But, I mean, it just did seem like the people he was in there with felt that he was at their level. He was somebody who was worthy of his spot in the match and deserved to be put over, at least momentarily. So, to me, it feels like it's Pete's time to have a shot, have a go at the main roster. And it would make perfect sense for him to drop the title to Walter. So I think they'll have a hell of a match on the way out. And I hope it's something that really catches Vince's eye and convinces the chairman that Pete Dunne is worthy of a sustained push.
I mean, let's just take a quick look at the TakeOver card for TakeOver New York and just see how you're feeling about it. So Let me just pull up here. TakeOver New York. Of course, I'm not able to find it because I'm looking for it on the air. Okay, here we go. The matches that we've got are Pete Dunne versus Walter for the UK Championship. We've got Johnny Gargano against Adam Cole in a 2 out of 3 falls match for the vacant NXT Championship. We've got Velveteen Dream and Matt Riddle for the North American title. We've got the War Raiders against Aleister Black and Ricochet for the NXT Tag Team titles, and a Fatal 4-Way for the Women's title with Shayna Baszler, Io Shirai, Bianca Belair and Kairi Sane. How does that card look to you?
I've got to say I'm a few weeks behind on my NXT. I must confess, can't say I'm really that keen on the Women's title match. We've seen Shayna versus Bianca Belair at the last TakeOver. We talked about it at the time. I thought that match was a big disappointment. It really exposed Bianca Belair as somebody who's not a complete wrestler. We've already seen Shayna versus Kairi Sane umpteen times. Don't really want to see that match again. I mean, as good as it has been. Io Shirai is really good, but you would think that maybe Io Shirai and Kairi would be getting the call to go up and be part of the tag team division. That's really where I see their future. Do you agree with that, Kenny?
Yeah, no, I would agree with that.
So, I mean, to me, Shayna is somebody that she's ready for the main roster. She's been ready for the main roster for a long time. I understand, obviously, that, you know, Jasmine and Marina are not ready for the main roster and they don't want to break that partnership up. Then I can understand why they're keeping Shayna in NXT. But it doesn't, I don't know whether it really feels like any of those challengers in the women's match should really be beating Shayna Baszler.
Well, none of them feel like big babyface performers. You know, like on the main roster, you've got Asuka, you've got Becky Lynch, you've got these babyfaces who you root for and you want to win. And I just don't feel like I don't feel like I root for any of those three women as much as I do for those two women on the main roster.
Exactly. I mean, since Shayna is the heel, we're supposed to be rooting for one of her opponents to defeat her. And I'm rooting for Shayna to win. So the psychology is all screwed up there. As for Aleister Black and Ricochet versus the War Raiders, why are Aleister Black and Ricochet facing the War Raiders when they're working on the main roster? Don't get that at all. Can you explain that one to me? Or is this the Dusty? They won the Dusty Classic, right? Is that
yes,
right?
Yes, they won the Dusty Classic.
All right, okay. But why didn't a team that's actually staying in NXT win the Dusty Classic? It makes no sense to me that Black and Ricochet, who are on the main roster, why are they going back to NXT to face the champs? I get that they won the tournament, but don't get that booking at all. So, you know, that one's lost on me, I'm afraid. I would rather see a new team get the opportunity to face the War Raiders and for a new program to emerge that's going to run into April, throughout April and into May or into...
I think War Raiders against Oney Lorcan and Danny Burch could have been good.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a huge fan of the War Raiders like yourself.
I hate them. Yeah. I'd set them on fire if I could.
Yeah, I just don't see the appeal at all. Don't really enjoy the characters. I appreciate the fact that they can do things in the ring. They are really good in the ring, but I'm not a fan of the act. I don't see a future for them on the main roster. And I understand, as I've said, why this match is happening, but I don't understand the booking. I don't understand the thought process behind it. Johnny Gargano versus Adam Cole for the vacant title. You know, is Gargano going to get the call? Is he going up to the main roster or is he not? If he wins the title, then presumably he isn't. But if he loses and Adam Cole wins the belt, then maybe Gargano is going up. I do fear for Gargano on the main roster. I just don't think he's going to make it on the main roster. I think he's too small. I think his character is something that Vince is just not going to be able to comprehend the subtleties of it. It's just going to be lost on him. I think he would just end up on 205 Live. So maybe a title win here and staying in NXT is the best thing for his career in the long run. But by the same token, maybe this is time for Adam Cole. This should be Adam Cole's time to step up and become the champ. So I can't really choose a winner there. Who do you think is going to go over in that match?
I think Adam Cole probably is going to go over on it. I could imagine that he would win it and then Johnny Gargano goes up to the main roster. But yeah, without Tommaso Ciampa there, I think it's a more challenging spot for him to be in.
Yeah.
I think the best he can hope for is is maybe being on SmackDown and kind of being a mid. But then on SmackDown, you've got Mustafa Ali, you've got Kofi Kingston. There's a lot of kind of mid-card players.
I mean, Gargano looks so small in the Royal Rumble. When he's doing those sequences with Dean Ambrose, Dean Ambrose was just so much taller and so much like wider than him. And Gargano was really exposed as such a small guy in that match. And you know the decision makers were watching that. So I think he would just end up on 205 Live. I've got no confidence in him at all on the main roster and in making it. And that's not because he's not talented, because he obviously is talented. It's just that I don't see him as somebody that the hierarchy would push, would make a star. I mean, you look at all the guys who haven't made it, who you would have thought might have made it and didn't either. And Johnny, to me, just seems like somebody who's going to be in deep trouble on that main roster. Velveteen Dream versus... Who was Velveteen Dream?
Matt Riddle.
I know you're not a fan of Matt Riddle, but I think Matt Riddle is a really talented guy. I think these two can have an amazing match. Is Matt Riddle still undefeated?
Well, I mean, technically no, because he just lost in a five-way, but he wasn't pinned.
Okay.
So it depends what your definition of undefeated is.
Okay. I think this is a big match for both. I mean, we all know that Velveteen Dream's, you would think he's as close to anyone in the WWE system as a can't-miss star, you know, on the main roster. If he drops the belt to Matt Riddle, maybe Dream will get the call in the Superstar Shake-Up in mid-April. I'm not sure if Dream's ready yet. I don't think he's far off. And also, I think timing when it comes to call-ups is a big thing. Because if you stay in NXT too long, I think it can have a detrimental effect on you in terms of how you're viewed in the company. So maybe should be Dream's time to get the call. Maybe he should drop the belt to Riddle, and maybe Dream should be summoned to the main roster in mid-April. Do you think Dream's ready for the main roster?
I think he's ready, but I think the problem is that the way that NXT runs is pretty problematic, because... Like, the idea is that a lot of people are ready to go up. Like, Shayna's ready to go up, Velveteen Dream's ready to go up. But if you bring those people up, then NXT's kind of stuck. So I wonder if we're going to see NXT... Like, I wonder if we're going to see them change the way they do it, where, like, people in the main roster get drafted to NXT, and it's not as much of a drop down, it's just a kind of move across.
Yeah.
That could be something they could do. You know, they're probably not going to want to do that with a lot of big paid talents, because they don't want to waste it on, like, you know, Largo, Florida on a Friday night in front of 200 people. But at the same time, I think they're getting close to kind of like, well, how many more people can you bring in from the indie scene, you know? Yeah. They're starting to run out.
Well, they are. And the thing is, it's as we've seen with the call-ups this year and last year and in 2017 as well. If they don't really have a plan for you, then it's better off for you not to be called up. It's like, only bring these people up when you actually have a plan for them and when you are definitely going to use them. Don't bring them up because, it's time to bring them up. Bring them up because you've got a purpose for them on the main roster. And there's a lot of ex-NXT guys who are just floundering up there, who are just meandering and doing nothing. So... you would hate to see Dream get the call and then them not use him to even, you know, never mind the best of his abilities, but anywhere near the best of his abilities. You would hate to see that. And you would rather that he stayed in NXT for another 6 months.
For sure. So what we'll do, just with Raw and SmackDown, we'll shake it up a wee bit as to how we do it. We'll talk about a couple of things from Raw and SmackDown, and then what we'll do is we'll run down the WrestleMania card and see how we feel about it, you know, 2.5 weeks out. So on Raw, I guess the two big talking points really were the Ronda Rousey stuff, where she beat Dana Brooke, and you called it like 20 seconds, however long it was.
Yeah, it wasn't. Well, I've got it eight. I think I've got it down as 18 seconds.
Okay, so 18 seconds she beats her, and then she just goes mental. She's beating up security. She's beating up referees. Travis Brown, her husband, is trying to, you know, control her at ringside and stop her from, you know, beating up more people. And then she goes to the back with Travis Brown. I mean, I thought Ronda just looked like an absolute star here. And again, I feel like she's channeling how the crowd have responded to her and using it and how she comes across on TV. What did you make of her performance?
Yeah, it was, it was a really strong performance. Another robotic Dana promo, I'm afraid. That promo was just lousy. Sorry, it was. And then she was decimated by Rousey. At this point, it's hard to really feel bad for Dana or hard to think, well, they've wasted her here, because this is, you know, she doesn't really strike me as somebody that they believe in. And she was just here, as you said, to get Ronda over as this killer, as this monster, as this unstoppable force of nature. So she won in 18 seconds. Then then she started, refs and security were out. And then there's this big rumble at ringside. And then Travis Brown. I mean, that's a country music star's name, isn't it? Travis Brown. Travis Brown, her husband, he pounded one of the security bods from the ringside spot, then picked Ronda over the guardrail, and then they left. So it definitely felt to me like they wanted to get him more involved in this process. I mean, do you think he's going to start training? Could he be getting involved? If she's sticking around, it would seem to me that he's going to be a big part of her future. I'm interested to see how this plays out and what sort of role he's going to have if she's sticking around after WrestleMania.
He's got a great look. You know, he's the sort of guy you could imagine doing something. So it wouldn't shock me.
Yeah, I don't know what they're going to do here. I mean, it's, you know, I've got a lot of thoughts in my head as to what's really going on in the background here, but I'm not going to talk about them here because they may be seen as in poor taste and what the actual goal of all this is. But I mean, to me, yeah, this was a big night for Ronda. She really came across as somebody that's unstoppable here. And that was the purpose. That was the goal of the segment. And I guess it's more stacking the odds against Becky Lynch and Charlotte. Would have been interesting for those two maybe to be backstage and for them to have cameras on them and for maybe just to have a reaction shot of what Charlotte and Becky made of all this. And maybe for those two to sort of sell a little bit and look a little bit afraid of Ronda and how are they going to beat her. I think something like that would be really interesting, Kenny, if they were to add that on.
Yeah, I think for me, what they need to do, I thought Ronda was great here. I think Ronda, like, I don't like using this terminology because I don't think it's fair to tell people how they should feel as a fan, but it's a dangerous way to think. But in saying that, I'm about to do that. I think that with Ronda, I think if you don't think that she should be in wrestling, I just don't think you get it. I don't think you get what it is, because what she's doing is she's using a lot of the criticisms against her to become a good heel. And I think that she's really effective and she's really putting everything into it. And, you know, she's got all these, like, T-shirts about, like, kayfabe and all the shit that she's been saying. And I think it's just adding to people dislike her, because it's very hard in 2019... to get wrestling fans to dislike you as a heel, because most of the time it's like, you know, we praise the heels for being good heels. That's what the fandom is now a lot of the time. So yeah, you kind of have to be more interested and smarter about how you get people to dislike you. And I feel like she does a pretty good job of it. So, but I do think the one thing that they need to do for the next 2 weeks coming up, we get two Raws left of WrestleMania. We need to see Ronda, Becky and Charlotte on the same show. We need to see them interacting. The separation's been a problem, I think.
I think so. I mean, what Rousey's, but you're right there, Kenny, what Rousey's brings to this, and she does the same thing that Lesnar does, is she brings a realism to it that really no one else does. If you look at what Lesnar and Rousey do, and it's kind of amazing how Rousey absolutely gets this, and she's only been in the business a year, but she brings this unbelievable realism that most other wrestlers don't. She has this aura. It's everything about her. And it's also the way she sells. I actually watched Raw Rumble again this week for my WrestleTalk magazine write-up, and actually enjoyed the show even more the second time, and grew and gained a great appreciation for the Sasha Banks versus Ronda Rousey match on that card, and particularly Rousey's performance. I thought Banks was really good as well, but Rousey was amazing in that match with a selling, just selling total peril. And you think to yourself, wow, she could lose. I mean, she's not going to, but she could. And she just absolutely brings it in terms of giving everything to the match. Same with Lesnar. Go back and look at the way he sold the moment that Finn Balor shoved him into the announce table, and he's selling his stomach, and he's going back to selling it, and he's selling it, and he's selling it. He's in absolute agony. Who else does this, Kenny, with that level of believability? And the great irony is all these fans out there who are knocking wrestling for not being believable, like, they're probably the ones who are knocking round. It's like these are the ones who are bringing this realism to pro wrestling that you're seeking. You know, give them huge credit for it because they absolutely deserve it. I think almost every wrestler out there could learn something from Rousey and Lesnar about the presentation of what you do and extracting real emotion from the audience. And lots of people say that's what's missing from pro wrestling today, and I agree with them.
Well, I mean, it's you know, the argument, because, you know, some people would say, well, Kenny, you know, you think that you think Ronda's a really good heel, but, like, you know, you don't think Jinder was a good heel in the feud, in the stuff in 2017. But the difference is with Ronda, like, Ronda in the feuds that she's in has actually elevated the opponents. Yes. Sasha Banks felt like a star for the first time in God knows how long, thanks to working with Ronda. Ruby Riott's, you know, apart from the squash match they had, but, you know, in the competitive ones they've had on Raw, she felt more of a star than she ever had. Whereas with Jinder, I felt that he, not him, it's not his fault, because he just was put in a position that he wasn't equipped to be in. He actually really hurt Nakamura as a character. Carmella really hurt Asuka as a character. And I think if you're a good heel, your job is to enhance whatever babyface you face and not make the babyfaces after they work with you feel very damaged.
Exactly, you're exactly right. I mean, Jinder devalued the title and he devalued his opponents. That's what he did. He was not capable of wearing that title. And to this day, I just find it astounding that they made him champion. I have no idea why they did it. And he just devalued everything he took. It was the reverse Midas touch. And you look at Rousey and Lesnar, and all right, I don't agree with the way the Lesnar-Balor match played out, and certainly don't agree with the beating that Lesnar inflicted upon Balor after the match. But prior to that, what a performance. Just an amazingly realistic match. You know, and Lesnar is a guy who's got the ability to elevate anyone that he's in the ring with. Same with Rousey. Sadly, that's not the case with Jinder.
Yeah, exactly. And that's where the difference is. And we'll come back to that in a second on SmackDown. But so as I say, we're not going to cover a lot of stuff on Raw, because we're going to go through the WrestleMania card, which is where we can kind of, you know, talk about a lot of the Raw stuff and SmackDown stuff. But the only other thing I wanted to get your opinion on from Raw is Kurt Angle comes out to announce his WrestleMania farewell opponent. And he announces that it's going to be Baron Corbin. Now, on one hand, it does make storyline sense, because Baron Corbin is the guy who got him out of his job. He beat him on Raw. There is an element of revenge, I guess. But this, the reaction to this match from fans, wrestlers, Kurt Angle's wife, Jim Ross, all these different people, has been horrendous. Did you see John Cena's Instagram post?
I think I did read something about it, but as you know, Kenny, I just try to avoid Cena at all costs.
Well, I've got to give Cena props on this one. So Cena just put up a photo of a fan holding a sign saying Baron Corbin is a dumpster fire. No text, no nothing. And I wonder if that's maybe a, you know, he wishes he was in the match or whatever. Cena was actually the name that the Chicago crowd chanted, hoping that that was going to be the name rather than Baron Corbin. But break it down for me. What do you think of this decision of Baron Corbin being the choice? And do you think that the backlash that it's received might make them change their mind?
Well, can I just say that didn't Cena make a dumpster fire reference to Baron Corbin before he buried him in 2017?
He did.
Before that absolutely shocking and just like unforgivable burial of the guy, you know.
SummerSlam opener.
Yes, absolutely awful. So as far as Corbin, as Kurt Angle's opponent at WrestleMania, I mean, Angle said it in a way that was totally apologetic. I mean, he brought up later in the show, oh, this has got a terrible response on social media. It was just like people were up in arms that Baron Corbin had been given this slot. And it was quite interesting, really, that Chad Gable came out for the match with Kurt Angle on this week's Raw. And the announcement that Angle would face Corbin, it just killed the crowd. crowd, they were just like frozen in silence. It was like tumbleweeds rolling past, you know, after this announcement. And Angle versus Chad Gable was so good that they finally got into it. Why are they not doing more with Chad Gable, Kenny? Why are they not doing more with this guy?
Yeah, he is someone who should be used more. But I mean, do you think?
As for Corbin, I don't think the match is going to take place. I think it's all some type of storyline. Somebody will come out, probably Cena. Maybe he'll throw Corbin into a dumpster fire. Maybe they'll have a dumpster set off at the, side of the stage at WrestleMania. Cena will set fire to it and he'll throw Corbin into it. And then he'll go out and have the match with Angle. I don't believe Corbin and Angle are going to face off at WrestleMania. I can't believe that it's going to happen. It just seems to me like something they've created so that on the night they can provoke a different response for someone who would normally be booed. And that man could be John Cena.
Well, you know, it's funny because when I was watching the Chad Gable Kurt Angle match, and it was pretty decent. I mean, Kurt Angle is so drastically different from the performer he was 5 years ago that it's tough to watch. And I almost wonder if the idea that they've had is that, well, maybe if we put him in there just to beat Corbin very decisively, very quickly, that, you know, the fans will be happy because can Kurt Angle wrestle a full match? But at the same time, I just think that when you advertise a farewell match, you know, don't build it up if it's Corbin.
I mean, I can't believe that match is going to take place because it's going to be received so poorly on the night.
Shall we make some sort of wager?
Well, the fact that they've acknowledged that people don't like it, they wouldn't be doing that for no reason. There's got to be a purpose for them acknowledging that on the air. It has to be. So I think this is part of... This is. I don't think Corbin will be the guy. I think Corbin will come out and then something will happen and then somebody will replace Angle. But you're right, Kenny, about Angle. I mean, we don't want to see him try and have a 15-minute match. So maybe if he was just in there for 3 minutes or 2 minutes, maybe that would be the best for him. I mean, he's left the retirement match a couple of years too late. He should have really had it 2 years ago when he came back. 2 years ago, that's right, isn't it? Yeah, he should have had it Is that right, Kenny, 2 years ago?
He returned as the GM the night after WrestleMania 2 years ago when he first got back in the ring with WWE about 18 months ago at TLC with Shield.
18 months ago. And of course, you know, the fear you have with Angle, knowing how driven he is, if they say to him, right, we want you to have a 14, 15-minute match with, say, John Cena, it's going to require him to push himself far beyond his physical capabilities. So, I mean, thinking about it, maybe for Angle, the best thing for him is to have that short match. Still, it feels like Corbin is, you know, is obviously an unsatisfactory opponent. You'd rather see him in there with somebody that he could have a good short match rather than this guy that's never going to get over. I mean, I guess it does make storyline sense. So I guess from that point of view, there is a reason for it to happen. But I understand why people, you know, are dissatisfied with what is currently advertised.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting one to see how they pan it out. But let me know if you want to do a wee wager on that one, because I'd bet you £20 on that. But I mean, I don't feel like
you think the Corbin match is going to happen, right?
I don't know for sure, but I'm not as sure that it's not going to happen. But at the same time, even if it does happen, I won't feel like a winner. I'll be £20 down, and I'll be £20 up, but I'll have to watch a Baron Corbin Kurt Angle match. So really, it's like a double loss. Anyway, so we'll move on to SmackDown just now. We'll cover the rest of the Raw stuff in the WrestleMania card. But just the big thing from SmackDown to cover is obviously the Kofi Kingston storyline, which has been very controversially received on social media. The gauntlet match, where he goes through the five opponents, he wins, he's going to go to WrestleMania. Vince comes out and says, you know, you're going to WrestleMania if you can beat this one last opponent. It's Daniel Bryan, who comes out and beats him. On social media, there has been some people who are you know, really happy with the kind of long-term story they're trying to tell and the underdog being built up. And then there is, on the other side, some people saying it's a race thing. Some people saying that it's in poor taste and, you know, Vince is keeping him down because of the colour of his skin and all this kind of stuff. Where do you kind of sit on the whole thing? How it played out on SmackDown? How did you feel that it went? And are they telling an effective story?
I mean, I think they are telling an effective story. I mean, I'm still labouring under the assumption that it will be Kofi Kingston versus Daniel Bryan at WrestleMania. Is that your mindset as well, Kenny?
Yeah, 100%. I think it's Kofi and Bryan at WrestleMania. You talked earlier on about how, you know, because I do want to bring up in a second the race element to it, which is important. But, like, you know, before we bring that up, I think the element is people did say they want long-term stories, right? They want something to be in there. And what they're doing is they are telling a long-term story with Kofi Kingston. And I feel like, for me anyway, every time he's getting the rug pulled out from under him, I actually feel more invested in him.
Yeah.
And I feel more invested in winning. I think Big E and Xavier are playing some of the best work of their career and sort of being in his corner and really sort of fighting for him. So the story's working for me, and I feel like it's building some sort of crescendo next week on SmackDown. I don't know if you saw this, but there was a WWE.com exclusive interview with the New Day after SmackDown, and at one point Xavier Woods says in the interview, "It's like you've bet against the house at a casino and you've not won." And what's interesting about that is next week they're going to be at the Mohegan Sun Casino for SmackDown. And I don't know if that was planned or not, but it almost feels like we're going to get something next week. Tom Phillips was on Busted Open Radio yesterday, where he said that if there was an Occupy SmackDown movement, he would walk out on Kofi Kingston's side. So people are on Kofi's side. So I think that I feel the storyline is effective.
Well, I think it is as well. I mean, people can find subtext in whatever they want. I mean, I don't see that. I don't see it. I mean, you look at the Gauntlet match. Kingston defeated Sheamus, really hot start to the Gauntlet series. Then he defeated Cesaro, beat Rowan by disqualification. Rowan used a chair, then destroyed Kofi afterwards. Iron clawed him through a commentary table. Samoa Joe came out. I mean, I guess my only complaint of the Gauntlet match was it's starting to get a little bit silly at this point that Kofi can defeat all these people. You know, all these stars somehow managed to defeat Joe. I mean, then Joe then applies a choke afterwards. I mean, it getting to the point where it's like we're entering super Kofi territory here. It's almost like, you know, he's some type of modern day John Cena. Then Randy Orton comes out. I enjoyed the little touch there where Orton called Kofi stupid, which was like, you know, flashback hack back to their famous match on the January 11th, 2010 Raw, in which Orton called Kofi stupid. They'd also had a bit of a run in Madison Square Garden, I believe it was, I think it was November 2009, when Kofi was late coming out to do a run-in, which actually wasn't his fault. That was due to a sound cueing error, but Kofi got the blame for that. So a lot of people kind of blame Orton for Kofi not making it as a bigger star back in 2010. So that was a nice nod to that period there. Then Kofi pinned Orton as well. So, I mean, what a performance. As you said, Kenny, I mean, Xavier Woods and Big E have been a big part of this. They've really been quite selfless by standing back, and they're all for Kofi, and they're like, well, we'll put our careers to one side because this is all about you. Another nice touch on the SmackDown show was you had all the baby faces watching the Gauntlet series on a big screen backstage, all rooting for Kingston to win. So Kofi's beaten Orton as well. And then Vince McMahon comes out to congratulate him. He says, "You're going to WrestleMania as long as you can beat this one last opponent." And out comes Daniel Bryan. Obviously, Bryan defeats Kofi. So apparently, as things stand now, Kingston will not face Daniel Bryan at WrestleMania. But I mean, I think something's going to happen next week to undo that, and Kingston will still face Bryan for the title at WrestleMania. So, far as I'm concerned, it's made me it's made me more invested in the story and more in, I mean, I'm going to be watching SmackDown anyway, of course, but if I was somebody that maybe wasn't a regular viewer of SmackDown and would only watch it now and again, to me, this would be a huge incentive to tune in next week to see how Kofi can overcome this latest by Vince McMahon to prevent Kofi Kingston from facing Daniel Bryan at WrestleMania. I think it's as far as wrestling goes, I think this is riveting stuff, Kenny.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think it's pretty riveting. I think the race element that I should bring in is more to do with, I know Byron Saxton had kind of said something on SmackDown about, you know, like people like Kofi, and then Big E in a video on Twitter had said people like us and stuff like that. I think it is being brought in slightly, but to me it's like, you know, I think they're stacking the deck in different ways against Kofi that they would have done anyway. If, you know, because they've done this before to Steve Austin, they've done it to The Rock, they've done it to Mick Foley. They're doing it to Mick Foley right now on Heat, Retro Heat, they were watching. They're doing it to Steve Austin.
I mean, 5 years ago, they did it with Daniel Bryan. I mean, we had Daniel Bryan come out at the start of the show, and he basically said, well, the reason, you know, that he's not in this match is because, you know, he's average, you know, and he's like a B-plus player. He didn't deserve to be in this position. So, I mean, you go back to the 2014 Bryan storyline. He'd been referred to as a B-plus player by the Authority, of course. I mean, no one really, obviously, no one was making any comments about it having a race element then. To me, it's a very similar storyline to that.
I think the thing is here is it feels to me like if you're going to bring this element in, which obviously, you know, they did this years ago far more prominently with Booker T and Triple H. But the problem with that was that the Booker T didn't get to overcome Triple H. I think if this story is, you know, mainly about, you know, Kofi Kingston being this kind of mid-card guy they don't like, and they can kind of have subtle nods to the race element to it, because I don't think there's been an African-American WWE champion. There's been a World Heavyweight champion, but I think this would be the first. And for Kofi to overcome that and become that champion would be a great story. And, you know, look, drama is wrestling. I think that the problem would be if Kofi fails and it's portrayed that he failed because of that reason. But I don't think that's the story they're telling. I think there's little elements they're showing here and there, and I think that's, for me, more kind of like deep storytelling that I enjoy. So all I can speak about is my, you know, like you say, it's working for you, it's working for me. I said on this podcast about a month ago that I thought that Kofi was more a nostalgia thing, and I think that they've actually turned me around on it and made me think that he really should win the title at WrestleMania and should have a run with it and see how he goes, because the people are getting behind him. I'm a bit sick of the gauntlet match concept, I've got to say. While I enjoyed some of the parts of it, like the Randy Orton stupid bit and whatever, I was kind of bored for a lot of it. But it's because we've seen Kofi do a gauntlet match not too long ago. Yeah. We've seen the Seth Rollins one last year. I think we need to kind of like stay away from the gauntlet match for a little while.
Yeah, and like when a guy can win, score all these victories, all these big names, I think it really devalues the big names. And certainly Joe, who's US champion, is going to be facing Rey Mysterio. And Randy Orton, who's in this dream, you know, this ex-indie guy versus WWE product battle of the stars. I mean, what's Randy Orton doing losing to Kofi Kingston in Kofi Kingston's fifth match of the evening? I mean, to me, that's a bit ludicrous, really. You know, Brian, as I say, it's said earlier in the show that Kofi had been chosen and he'd earned nothing. So there was no similarities, Brian was saying, there's no similarities between what he had gone through 5 years ago and what Kofi was going through now. So Brian, I think, would really argue against what some people are saying here, that Kofi had been chosen by the company for this spot and was not somebody that was being held back. And it was Brian 5 years ago that had been held back, and he had to fight the power, he had to fight the system, and he had to overcome. So that was, you know, how he and Kofi differed. And, you know, that made him in some ways better. So I don't see that element of it at all. If other people want to find that in there, that's up to them. Maybe in future I'll see it as well, but I don't see it right now. Or maybe, Kenny, I don't want to see it. I would rather not. I don't like seeing those things come into pro wrestling, because I don't think there's any need for it.
Which it's funny because I feel I saw a great series of tweets, and I can't bring it up because we've had some recording issues here, and I feel like if I bring up Twitter, the feed of our audio is going to crash again. But one of our listeners, Karan, he made a great point about the parallel of the story of Daniel Bryan now being everything that he hated. He is now part of the problem, and he's now doing to Kofi Kingston what was done to him. You know, he's become what he hated. And that's really good storytelling when you can bring that in. And I think that, you know, we were talking in January about, you know, who's the guy to take on take on Daniel Bryan at WrestleMania? You were saying Shawn Michaels. I was saying maybe it's Cena or whoever. Who knew that Kofi Kingston would be the option all along that we just didn't know we wanted? But they've told a good enough story. That's who we want. So,
yeah, absolutely.
Props to them. So let's go through the WrestleMania card and we'll bring up some Raw and SmackDown stuff as we go through it. So right now, there could be 17 to 18 matches on WrestleMania, including the pre-show. So I'm just going to go through the kind of rough options of what we could get. And I just want you to tell me, Finn, what you think. What do you think of the match option? Do you want to see it? Do you think it deserves to be on WrestleMania or the pre-show? Here we go. Raw tag titles are probably going to be some form of match between The Revival, Aleister Black and Ricochet, and maybe Bobby Roode and Chad Gable.
That's going to be on the kickoff.
Do you think that is that a match that should be on WrestleMania in some form?
I'm not really interested in seeing it at WrestleMania. I understand that the Revival did get actually got a little bit of mic time this week, didn't they, Kenny?
Almost like they've been listening to you.
But not really a whole lot. I don't really want to see that match. It doesn't excite me. I don't think it's a WrestleMania-worthy match. I understand that. Let's not go into get into the conversation of what shouldn't of why it should be there or why it shouldn't be there. All right, I'll try and avoid that. I'm not excited about that match, Kenny, in a nutshell. How are you?
Well, no, because we've seen it.
Yes.
So I think, you know, if they wanted to do Revival versus Black and Ricochet, that'd be one thing, but it kind of feels like that's not quite there. I feel bad for the Revival because, you know, you would love them to be on WrestleMania, but I think this is prime for the cutting block.
This is an expendable match.
Potential Intercontinental Championship match of Lashley defending against maybe the Balor as the Demon. We talked about how Balor was on the advertisements. Do you think this is a match we're going to see at WrestleMania?
Well, I mean, possibly. I mean, it was a bit strange on this week's Raw, where it felt like, you know, we had a tag match, didn't we? We had a tag match between Bobby Lashley and Leo Rush versus Finn Balor and Braun Strowman. Braun Strowman was Finn's mystery partner. And the match felt all about Braun Strowman. It was all about really trying to reheat Strowman. And then later on the program, to the sound of groans worldwide, he announced that he was entering the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal. So why was Strowman really, why was the focus of this match all on Strowman when he was then going to be entering the Battle Royal? So if it is going to be Finn Balor versus Lashley, why was that not really the focus of this match? I'm confused, Kenny. Do you have any answers for me?
I do not. I mean, the only answer I can say is Braun Strowman better bloody win the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal.
So
I mean, if he can't overcome the luminaries such as Titus O'Neil, Jinder Mahal, and Kurt Hawkins. So
he should just give up now, shouldn't he? You know, maybe those Saturday Night Live guys. Maybe they'll cause him to be eliminated. I mean, they're going to be involved somehow, aren't they?
Oh, God.
Hey, maybe they'll be in the match. So, I mean, I'm not really excited about Lashley versus Balor, even if Balor comes out as the Demon. It doesn't really appeal to me. I would have liked to have seen Balor do something else. Again, it's a match we've seen over and over.
Yep. We've obviously got those two battle royals, the women's and the men's, with Strowman and the Andre the Giant Battle Royal. Not much to say about them. No. But we do have Bayley and Sasha defend the women's tag team titles. The idea, I guess, is it's maybe going to be Beth Phoenix and Natalya, Nia Jax and Tamina, and the Iconics. Who do you think ends up in the match? And are you looking forward to? I mean, I think Bayley and Sasha have done a good job with the tag titles so far, and I'm keen to see them on the card. I think it could be good.
Yeah, I think this match needs to be on the card because it's still a new title. And WWE needs to send the message that this match matters. I mean, it was funny on Raw this week when Beth Phoenix called Natalya the very best in WWE and people booed. That was funny. So, yeah, I want to see this match on the card. Hopefully, Sasha and Bayley will retain, because I don't think either of those teams, I mean, Phoenix is just coming back for a little nostalgia run. I can't imagine that her and Natalya are going to win. I mean, the Iconics scored the win on SmackDown this week, but it was not a convincing win at all. So I don't want to see those two as champs. I would rather see Sasha and Bayley retain in that match, but I think it deserves a place on the card.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think it should be pretty good. I actually like the whole Beth and Natalya team. I like Nia and Tamina as a team. You know, the Iconics, like, throw them in there. It can't do any harm. I think maybe the most boring match on paper for me, and this is just for me, I know some people are going to be into it, Buddy Murphy defending the Cruiserweight title against Tony Nese.
That's a kickoff match.
can they put that put it on Takeover or something? Like, get it away. Like, oh God, we're wasting WrestleMania with this.
Maybe they could put that on before the kickoff starts.
Just a live dark match.
I mean, I'm not interested in that match either. I mean,
you know, we talked on the latest overrun. You know, if you go to patreon.com/insidetheropes, on the latest overrun, we answered a question about 205 Live and making it more relevant again. I tell you, the one way to not make it more relevant is to have the WrestleMania booking for the Cruiserweight title be Buddy Murphy and Tony Nese. Are they on crack?
Here. I mean, you're absolutely right. How is this? I mean, how is this going to convert anyone who doesn't currently watch 205 Live into a 205 Live supporter? It's just not going to. It's knackered from the off. It's an epic fail. I mean, it'll no doubt be a good match, but it's not going to do what it needs to do.
I'm sure that match would do great. And I'm not saying this with any sort of condescension or patronization. It would do great at like an Evolve show. Or, you know, like an indie show. It would do great there. But it's like, this is where the real thing comes into. If you're in WWE, there needs to be story, there needs to be characters, there needs to be an element. I think Buddy Murphy's decent. I quite like him from what I've seen of him. But I feel they've let him down here. I feel he's been very let down. And I feel bad for the guy because he's worked hard. And, you know, he could have had a good spot in WrestleMania with a match that people were interested in. And instead they've made... I mean, the final two choices were Cedric Alexander against Tony Nese. It's like being asked, how would you rather die, burning or drowning? It's not a great choice. Anyway, up next on the WrestleMania card, Shane McMahon versus The Miz.
Shane McMahon versus The Miz. I think we can safely say, Kenny, this will be on the main show.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's difficult because Shane and Miz are playing their roles pretty well. It almost feels like they should be reversed because we're so used to seeing The Miz as a heel, but I think he cut a pretty decent promo on SmackDown this week, and I think I'm curious as to how the match goes, because if Shane's the heel, then is he not going to do as much crazy stuff as he usually does? I'm curious about how the dynamics of the match go.
Well, I mean, Shane can only do certain things. I mean, there's a lot of things he can't do, and there's a lot of things he should be prevented from doing, but he's still going to do those big babyface spots because that's what he does. He's going to do the table bump, or at least attempt to. He's going to try the coast-to-coast dropkick. He's going to do big stunts, and he's going to do that because he needs them in order to have a match. They're not going to be out there for 6 or 7 minutes. This is going to be a 12-minute match. It's just going to be because it's Shane McMahon and it's The Miz, and they've dedicated so much time to it. I mean, this dates back to Crown Jewel, so this has actually been a long-running storyline. We say WWE doesn't do them. It absolutely has done a long-running storyline in this case. I mean, I agree with you. I thought The Miz did a really good job on SmackDown this week, just talking about, you know, how people had always said that he was never going to amount to anything. It's kind of a speech we've heard too many times, to be honest. But I thought Miz delivered it well. Called Shane rotten to the core, just like his father. May we get an appearance by Vince in this match, Kenny? What do you think?
I mean, I would pop so hard for George Deck and Vince.
I mean... That was the only thing missing, wasn't it, from the Royal Rumble celebration? You know, was Vince coming out, you know, joining with Miz and George and Shane? So maybe it will be Vince. Maybe Vince will make an appearance. It's hard to believe that he's going to sell for George. you know, he'd sell for Donald Trump. Don't see him selling for Miz's dad.
What a missed opportunity. Up next, though.
I think I'm not sure how it's going to play out, Kenny. I think they'll have a long match. I think it will work on the night. I think they'll make it work. But I think it's a match because the people are into it. It will work because of the atmosphere. But I think it would be the sort of match that you could endlessly nitpick and say, well, that made no sense. But as long as the crowd pop for it, I think Miz will get the win. I think that's all that really matters.
The Usos are going to defend the SmackDown Tag Team titles, I guess, maybe in a four-way against the Hardys, Rusev and Nakamura and The Bar, or maybe The New Day replace one of those teams. I think it might get main card. I think you've got the Hardys, you've got the Usos. I mean, they're teams that deserve to be on the show. I don't have any problem with it being a four-way.
No, I mean, the only thing is they haven't really done anything to promote it so far. So they're going to have to get the skates on starting next week to make this into something that people are really going to treat as... I mean, the thing is, on a show, I don't know how long WrestleMania is going to be, but it's going to be long. So, I mean, this could be a match that people are going to treat as intermission. They'll just have no heat at all. And I think if it's on the main show in the middle, that's how it will be treated. It'll probably go on after one of the big matches and it'll have no heat. And it'll be a real shame for the talent, especially the Usos, who I think have done really well for, well, certainly this year and certainly much of last year as well. It would be nice to see them in a really hot program, in a match that was a featured match rather than a buffer match, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, for sure. We did get the announcement on social media that next week on SmackDown there'll be a four-way to determine Asuka's opponent at WrestleMania with Mandy Rose, Naomi, Carmella and Sonya Deville. Who do you think is going to win this match and face Asuka on the pre-show of WrestleMania?
Oh my God. So wasn't it even mentioned on SmackDown, right?
Nope, it was not.
As you said, it's another kickoff match. I don't care who wins because Asuka isn't going to lose the title to any of those people. No, I'm not interested, Kenny, and it's a real shame what's happened to Asuka ever since she defeated Becky Lynch at Royal Rumble. I don't know what to say, really. I mean, it's
big letdown.
They've just forgotten about her. She's just got lost. And
it shows that they do not have a deep enough women's roster if this is the caliber of opponents that we've got the choice of.
It would be great for them to bring someone up from NXT. Why not just say that, right? Asuka is going to defend the title against a mystery opponent and bring somebody in with some talent. They could have even brought Shayna in for that match. But I mean, this is a huge letdown.
The idea that these four are in there and Nikki Cross hasn't is a joke.
Absolutely.
Up next, we've got Samoa Joe versus Rey Mysterio for the US title. Do you think this is one-on-one or do you think we see Andrade getting added in at some point?
Dominic... Ray's son was introduced for the first time since 2005, I guess it will be, won't it? Since the Eddie Guerrero.
Felt older in my life.
I know he's been training for a while, so I kind of always figured this day was coming, and this could have been partly why Rey Mysterio returned to WWE. Could have been his real purpose to try and get his son a job there. So I know his son's been training for a while. He's going to be at ringside. It was announced that he's going to be at ringside to watch Rey versus Samoa Joe. So he's going to be involved somehow. Could Andrade be involved? It would be a great spot for him. I'd like to see him get involved. I'd like to see him leave WrestleMania with the title because I think he's somebody who would greatly benefit from the US Championship. Rey doesn't need it at this point, and neither does Samoa Joe. So I'm hoping that Andrade is added to this match. Otherwise, he's just going to end up lost in one of the Battle Royals. Obviously the Men's Battle Royal. He's going to end up lost in the Men's Battle Royal.
So up next, I mean, do you think we see Baron Corbin and Kurt Angle? Do you think John Cena, because John Cena is going to be on the show.
Yeah.
Do you think he's involved in another match or do you think ultimately he is Kurt Angle's opponent?
I don't know. I mean, we've already talked about this quite a lot, so I don't really have anything to add to what I've already said.
The only thing is, I don't really see any other opponent for Cena. The only other opponent I would have seen was Joe, which they kind of hinted at a couple weeks ago, and they're not going that direction. So I can't really see Cena facing anybody else but Kurt Angle. So I guess, maybe he beats Corbin in like 10 seconds, and then Cena comes out, and that's really the farewell match.
Maybe they could have a dumpster match. Never mind the dumpster fire. That was obviously a ridiculous suggestion. Maybe they'll have a dumpster match.
Well, if Baron Corbin's in it, it's apt. AJ Styles versus Randy Orton at WrestleMania. How are you feeling about that match? Did a great promo last week. Not really much to further it this week, but I think the match could be pretty good if Randy Orton is motivated.
I think Randy's going to be motivated. I think this match, the success of this match is dependent upon how people respond to it. And you go back and look at the AJ Styles versus Daniel Bryan match at Royal Rumble, and you're like, wow, where was the response? So if we get something like that at Royal Rumble, at WrestleMania, which is possible because of the length of the show and how it's all structured, they could be in trouble. But technically, these two can have a hell of a match. If the crowd are with them, Kenny, I think this could be one of the best matches of the night.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, it's funny. AJ Styles actually comes up as an example in both cases for me. You know, you thought AJ Styles, Daniel Bryan would have a great Royal Rumble match. I thought it was pretty dire. Whereas, like, at WrestleMania 33, who would have thought that AJ Styles and Shane McMahon would have one of the best matches of the night? So, it really shows that AJ Styles has the ability to really pull it out of the bag or for it to just not really feel special. So it could go either way.
Yeah, it could do. Yeah, I think a lot of it. I mean, to me, that Styles versus. I mean, the ending of Styles versus Bryan at Royal Rumble, I didn't like it with the Rowan interference. I thought that was absurd. I thought it was just unimaginative, ridiculous. But I mean, I thought the content of the match was serious finesse there, Kenny. You know, if the fans had been with them, people would have viewed it very differently. But yeah,
I think the atmosphere of an audience plays into how good a match is.
Well, it does. You are right. I'm not sure if people were kind of burnt out on the high drama of Becky Lynch's victory, possibly. Or maybe they just needed a rest because the show was already, I think, at the 4.5-hour mark. Who knows? But I think we're going to have a few of those matches at WrestleMania because it seems to me that WrestleMania is going to be even longer than Royal Rumble. And I think Royal Rumble was 6 hours and 40 minutes, including the kickoff.
Yeah, I mean, the pacing of this show is going to be interesting. Triple H, Batista in a no-holds-barred match. Please, dear God, keep it under 15 minutes.
I mean, at least they've been... Exactly. At least they've been smart enough to attach this gimmick, this stipulation to it, so they're not going to do a regular one-on-one match with all those sort of boring Triple H wrestling holds and moves, which he just can't really do anymore.
So, last time he did one of these kind of matches, it was Sting and Triple H, and I loved the bells and whistles they threw into that before the finish. So
that was a pretty crazy match, and it did work, didn't it, on some level. Felt like a bit of a daft nostalgia match. Kind of sad to see the way Sting was treated at the end, but hey, WWE, WWF, they won the war, and they were reminding everyone of that.
We will never forget.
Yeah, I think... I'm hoping the match works. I think they've got to have a lot of diversions, a lot of extras to really help carry this. I think it will have them. I think they'll be all right. I think the match will be a success on the night.
Roman Reigns versus Drew McIntyre. It's not been announced yet, but I mean, it's pretty much going to happen. Drew cut some really good promo work on Raw this week. Big match for Drew, maybe the biggest of his career so far.
Yes.
What do you think about this match?
Yeah, should be a really good match. Hopefully, people won't boo Roman Reigns. I mean, at some point, I fear it's going to happen. I hope it doesn't happen here. I think they can have an intense, very physical matchup. We know they can. One would think that Roman Reigns is going over, but this is something, you know, that's hardly going to be any great revelation to anyone. But I think it would be very competitive. I think it'd be very long, and even in defeat, I think Drew will emerge from it with an enhanced stature. So yeah, definitely main roster match. Definitely main card match.
We've talked already about Daniel Bryan, Kofi Kingston for the WWE title. We don't need to go back onto that one. Brock Lesnar, Seth Rollins for the Universal title. Bit of a letdown of this feud so far for me.
I thought they did quite well on this week's Raw. I quite enjoyed the opening segment. I thought that was well done. There was a great moment there when Drew McIntyre came out and he starts ranting. Then Seth Rollins turned up and smashes Drew with a chair and smashes him again and again and again. And then he showed Lesnar, and Lesnar looked a little bit worried and he retreated. And I thought that was a really good moment there. And they gave Seth quite a lot of respect. And it made, you know, it should have been that light bulb moment. Hey, maybe Lesnar's afraid of Rollins. Maybe he thinks he can't defeat him in a one-on-one match. So I thought that there made me more interested in this match than I was previously. So I think these two can have a really good match, Kenny. I think it can work. I think Rollins has got a lot of support right now. I think people do see him as a top guy. And I don't know whether he's going to defeat Lesnar, because obviously Reigns is back now. And I think Vince sees Reigns as the long-term Universal Champion. But I think Rollins can have a short reign at least. So I think this match is going to do well. And I'm quietly confident that Rollins is going to go over.
It's funny because the top three matches, you got the Kofi, Bryan, Rollins, Lesnar, and the women's three-way, and it's just like, would they give you all three happy endings? Kofi, Seth, and Becky? They've not done it before, so it'd be curious to see if they do. Speaking of which, main event, Ronda Rousey, Becky Lynch, and Charlotte Flair for the Raw Women's title. How are you feeling about that match right now? Do you think it is going to go on last?
I think it is, yeah. I think it is going to go on last because I think they fear that if it doesn't, there may be some type of revolt in the audience and there could be some problems with responses and what have you. It looks like Lynch is going over, but if they can persuade, mind you, you know, I mean, even if they can persuade Rousey to stay and she retains the title, how well's that going to go down? I mean, I think people are primed for a Becky Lynch win and I think they want that happy ending. And I think if Lynch doesn't win the title, it'd be a massive setback for her because everything has been geared for her to win the title on that night in that match, especially if that match goes on last. So I think it's got to be Lynch. I don't think WWE... If the match doesn't go on last, then we know that Rousey's retaining. If the match goes on last, I think Lynch is going over. What do you think, Kenny?
I think Becky's the Daniel Bryan of this year. She's the one that everybody really wants to go over, you know, out of everybody. But then in saying that, you can make a case for I think the biggest person in trouble of not going over is Seth out of the three, which is weird to say. Just for the reasons that you stated, Roman's back and you don't know what they're going to do. But I think those three top matches, though, should be really good. And WrestleMania has the potential to be a really good card this year, so we'll see how they do.
You're absolutely right, Kenny. The problem it has is that it will end up being too long and fans will run out of energy in certain matches, and matches which, if they had an atmosphere, would be viewed as really good, will be viewed as disappointments, forgettable. And that will be a crying shame for the people who are involved in those particular matches, which will be kind of installed to allow people to, you know, catch the breath or, that's the thing. I mean, on shows, you've got to have those matches. I mean, Elias can only make so many appearances between matches. You know what I mean, Kenny?
Yep. It's going to be a long, long show. I was working out today. The pre-show is due to kick off at 3 p.m. local time. No, that's a lie. The pre-show is scheduled to kick off at 5 p.m. local time.
Okay.
I think the building opens at 3:30. So you want to be there by 4, probably, so you can get in. 5 to 7 is the pre-show, and then 7 to midnight is the main show. But then, I mean, I don't know. It feels like the main show is going to go longer than 5 hours.
Yeah.
And 5 hours would be midnight local time.
Oh, can I just say as well, Kenny, I've worked out that Elias... He's going to go out there. He probably will be installed between matches to give people a little break. And I think that will be helpful for a lot of matches as well. As I wrote on Facebook, Elias is going out there. He'll probably be interrupted several times or things will happen. And then finally, in his last appearance of the night, gong, the Undertaker will come out. That will be the Undertaker's appearance for the evening. He'll come out and destroy Elias and that'll be it. I don't see Undertaker doing a match, but I can see him inflicting a beating upon Elias for using his rope walk spot at the Royal Rumble and for making other comments about him.
I think it's a good spot for Taker, good spot for Elias. I think it works. So,
yeah.
So that is it for the main show, though. Finn, give us the plugs, though, of how people can get in touch with you and find you on the social.
Hey, yeah, my Twitter is at Finlay Martin. My website is finlaymartin.co.uk. I haven't uploaded it for a while because I'm currently working on WrestleTalk magazine. Must also apologise as well for not submitting the Dustin Rhodes interview to Inside the Ropes Patreon. I will be doing that next week. So that will be up there. And yeah, that's all my plugs, Kenny. Where are your plugs?
You can find me on Twitter at KennyMC1985 or Inside_the Ropes. You can go to patreon.com/InsideTheRopes for more content. Your support there means we can do all the stuff that we do. So please do consider it. You can get this podcast 24 hours early, an overrun with me and Finn, retro reviews, current pay-per-view reviews, NXT reviews, Pod of Thunder, and much, much more. Articles from Finn, interviews with Finn. And also youtube.com/InsideTheRopes. We've got a current WrestleMania series up there with Chris Jericho that's just started, where he looks back at some of his big WrestleMania moments. There's a pretty fascinating interview with him talking about WrestleMania 18 and his disappointment with that main event, and some of the ideas he had for the match that could have made it better, and just some pretty good analysis on that. We've got some more of his WrestleMania moments coming up. Dave Meltzer talking about Ronda Rousey's run in WWE so far. We've got Jesse Ventura up there. There's tons of stuff, so go and check that out at youtube.com/InsideTheRopes. Finn, I want to thank you again, as always, for being part of the show.
Thank you, Kenny, for having me, and look forward to next week's show as we continue the march towards WrestleMania.
We are on the road. We're almost there. There's no more fast lane roadblocks or anything like that. So we will be back next week. We hope you have a good weekend, everybody. If I be tonight, if I said tonight.